WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
Goalpost goes down for just the seventh time in program history. Syracuse football has secured a top 10 win in the Dome.
Freeman straight away elevates and slams. Ladies and gentlemen, Donnie Freeman is here in the 315.
And it's misery at the hands of Maryland. Syracuse with its closest shot at a championship in over a decade gets sent home.
Hearing from a host of guests.
Super excited to welcome back onto the podcast the voice of Syracuse men's lacrosse, Tim Leonard.
Now Jason Benetti, voice of the Detroit Tigers.
And providing all the hot takes.
If Syracuse beats Miami, there are no questions. This program is headed in the right direction. Fran Brown is the leader of the future.
These are guys that can make impacts on day one. You're going to see that presence. That just when Syracuse in the past, when you look at their offensive line and defensive line, they were undersized in committing penalties. Now, they might still commit penalties. Who knows? But at least you know they're not going to be undersized.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, and it starts right now.
Welcome in to the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Griffin and Josh back with you for another busy week of Syracuse sports. I know I'm doing well. I know Josh is probably doing well, but it's been busy times. You know, even though a basketball season is done, there's still some big news. Coach Jerry McNamara had his introductory press conference and event inside the Dome. That was on Monday. We're recording this Wednesday night. We'll probably get this up Thursday morning, midday, around then. Some big news for women's basketball, and obviously men's and women's lacrosse are still on a roll so far this season. I want to talk about the weather. Obviously, you know, spring is here. We're in the second week of spring, and we've kind of been feeling the spring. A couple 70-degree days, you know, it's been nice.
Yeah, I got to wear shorts for the first time this week. I mean, I normally don't bust them out this early, but the weather's been great this week. It has been a little rainy. I did bring my umbrella to my first class, and then it was sunny when I got out of it. So I left it in my dorm for my next class, and I came out, and it was pouring. So it's been rainy this week, and the good news is we get 70s again on Friday, but a lot of rain on the tap still. So yeah, it's still in that, you know, April showers right now, you know, so a little bit more of this, you know, cold slash rain before we finally break through. I don't think we're not out of the woods yet.
No, definitely not. And honestly, I just looked at the weather and it said we might even get snow next week.
Oh, wonderful.
So I don't want to think about that, even though I just did, and now I can't really get it out of my head. But that would be something. That would be surely something. But yeah, no, it's been really nice. I'll take the rain and the warm weather. Obviously, like, as long as it's nice out, I don't care. Like, the weather, the temperature is, I think, the most important. A sunny day while it's 70, that would be very nice. And I think we've gotten, like, bits and pieces. We haven't gotten, like, a full sunny 70-degree day.
No, not yet.
But it should come, hopefully. Hopefully. At least by the time May comes, and then we'll be gone.
By the time we're out of here.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, and that's the end of the Ostrom. I'm just kidding. The day that we get 70 and sunny, is maybe we'll record an outside Ostrom Avenue podcast for all our listeners. Let's start with football. You know, spring practice has been happening for about a week now, and we got some big news the past couple days. 5-star wide receiver Calvin Russell is injured indefinitely. Looks like he's going to miss a large chunk of time. Pete Thamel reported earlier today that it is a torn Achilles. He had surgery on it this week. The same surgeon that Jason Tatum, who has a triple-double tonight, just going to say put that out there, and Kevin Durant had for their surgeries for torn Achilles. A devastating injury. Someone that probably got a lot of Syracuse's NIL money. A guy that was supposed to be the focal point of an offense that had some rough times last year and Now it doesn't seem like he's going to suit up for Syracuse this season.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't play this year. Obviously, a torn Achilles, no slouch of an injury there. Pretty brutal injury, actually. I don't think there's really anything worse than tearing your Achilles. And we heard that he got the same doctor as some of the NBA guys, Jason Tatum and Kevin Durant, had seeked out this surgeon for their surgeries in the past few seasons. Yeah, I think the spring game is only 10 days away, and everyone was probably coming into the spring game to, one, get a glance at this team, but more importantly, to see their five-star player. I mean, Calvin Russell is a huge addition. I mean, this is a massive gift for the staff. They got him over Michigan and Miami, who are two schools that have been in the national championship in the last few seasons. So, this was a big gift for the program. And for that to once again, I mean, last year you could argue Ricky Collins was the main pull to come to the spring game to see him play, and then he ends up sitting out with the thumb injury. So now it's 2 years in a row that your main attraction to come down and see the spring team play aren't going to be suiting up. It's still obviously early in the season. I see a lot of people on Twitter saying, "Oh my gosh, the season is over. They're going to win three games again." Whether you want to think that Calvin Russell is actually going to swing this team three wins one way or another, I would advise against thinking the season is over because one player is out for the year. And I know people will say, "Well, last year, Steve Angeli, when he was a starter, we were 3-1 and we didn't win a game after that." Yeah, sure, but I think the quarterback position is a lot different. I think the staff did a good job of forming this wide receiver room. We saw some clips of Ya'Marri Hatcher this week. He was kind of a guy that was expected to be on that role last year, didn't really see a lot of playing time. Maybe Ya'Marri Hatcher is the breakout this season that we saw Daryl Gill kind of have last year. So I think way too early for them to be calling it quits on the season, but it's definitely a massive loss for this Orange squad.
Yeah, as someone that just brought a lot of eyeballs, someone that would have brought a lot of highlight plays, maybe a projected first round pick in a couple seasons, maybe, who knows? And hopefully he does stick around and stay with Syracuse, because that would be big. It just kind of it feels like it's always the Syracuse thing. Yeah, it would make sense for Syracuse to lose their starting quarterback after beating Clemson. It would make sense for Syracuse to have a five star for the first time in what feels like forever, and then lose him to injury. It just stinks, and it's something that Syracuse will have to get over. Yes, Syracuse has other wide receiver options, but Calvin Russell is probably the top guy on that depth chart.
Absolutely.
That's just what happens, and unfortunately for Syracuse fans, they'll have to wait a year, hopefully, to see Calvin Russell play inside the dome, which
Yeah.
I guess,
Unfortunate for your class, I mean. You guys were probably really looking forward to that. And
I mean,
I mean, we might not see Calvin Russell play a game in Orange. I mean, it's not like it's a given that he'll be back. You would hope he's back, but there's no guarantees that he would turn around after a year of sitting out and say he wants to stay here.
it's very true, and that's what stinks about this injury. At least we knew we were going to get 1 year of Calvin Russell. Now it's hopefully for Syracuse fans and for you, Josh, that you'll get a season of Calvin Russell,
I would hope
because
so.
I know I won't while on campus. Still be following the team, of course. Let's move over to GMAC. He had his introductory press conference on Monday. A lot of fans. I was there. Checking it all out, but I think a couple thousand, if I had to estimate.
3,000 was the estimation they
Yeah,
provided, which
three
was triple what
thousand.
Brian Hodgson got for his Providence introduction. By people were poking fun at him on Twitter over
Shots
that.
fired from Josh, maybe. Who knows? And maybe we'll get to see Syracuse and Providence play the TD Garden next basketball season, which would be interesting.
I got some games I got to pick up at the end of November now, so.
Yeah, true that. Although I think they'll find another tournament, but
I'm sure they will. Maybe
that's for
Maui, maybe the Bahamas, wherever they end up going.
exactly, who knows? But it was quite the event. And Syracuse, Brian Blair, the new athletic director, said he wants to weaponize the dome. Like, that was his big thing in the introductory press conference that he had a couple weeks ago. And this seemed like one of those events where it was. The band was there. There were cheerleaders. Practically every coach on campus, at least the big ones, Felicia Jack was there, Fran Brown was there, Gary Gate was there. I didn't see Coach Thorpe, but they might have had practice at that time. I'm not sure. But there were, like, the coaches were there. Boeheim was there. Season ticket holders, students, faculty, staff. It seemed like Syracuse University really did a great job at organizing this event. And it was just good to see that, like, Syracuse can finally, like, do something the right way.
I mean, I was listening in. I was in the middle. I was actually watching it during class and listening into it. But I thought, for as much hate as I think it was a good job by the athletic department to kind of let the decision loom for a little bit. They didn't rush and hire him right away, and I think that kind of let everyone kind of decompress, get their frustrations out from the previous season, and just kind of like let the athletic department hire the guy that they wanted to. And I think there was a lot of negative press around Jerry, and this was obviously before the whole Siena Duke game, but they didn't want, and myself included. I wanted Josh Schertz and I wanted Brian Hodgson, and I still think Jerry was my number three, and I'll stand by that. I still think he's going to be a good coach and obviously an upgrade, but I think you saw the narrative really switch. And I think where it really peaked was the press conference. I think you could see what it meant for him to be back, and what, the fans and some of the other guys that, had played with him and played after him and like been on the team when he was an assistant coach. I think you could really kind of start to see that narrative flip to this is serious, this is real, like this is our guy now, and we're not gonna, sit back and watch Syracuse be mediocre again. No, they're going to go cheer on the team. They're going to support McNamara to the fullest extent. And I think we have really seen that come to fruition throughout this week, especially during that press conference. And one thing that he did say that I just want to touch on real quickly, when he was asked, or when, no, this was in his opening statement to the team and the fans and everyone that was in attendance, was the cupboard was not bare here. There was plenty of talent on this team. And he wants to keep players. To what extent? We don't know. We don't know if he wants to keep two guys. We don't know if he wants to keep five guys. We don't know what that's going to look like. But Riven, I think there's a non-zero chance you get some guys back, like Donnie Freeman, like Sadiq White, like Nate George. Maybe Nate Kings gets a waiver. There's a non-zero chance we could be seeing some of the same players suit up, not just Kai and Anthony.
It's true. I wouldn't be shocked if that happened. The biggest domino is Donnie, of course, and I have no idea. And usually I'll have a good pulse on something, or I'll be leaning one way or the other. With Donnie, I have no idea. And what's interesting is, because I don't know if it's because of the way that the portal works this year. The portal opens a week from yesterday, Tuesday, April
That's the way it should be.
7th. The math is
The
difficult.
7th, right? I think the day after the national
The
championship.
day after the national championship is when the transfer portal opens. Right now, there are a good amount of players that have tweeted that they're planning to enter the portal, or that one of the college basketball reporters said that they've expected this player to enter the transfer portal. For Syracuse men's basketball, it's only been one guy, Aaron Womack. And that's it's interesting. Yes, I think more so like the fact that these conversations are happening. I expect more to do that, and whether that be out of their own will or Jerry telling them to go into the portal. Yeah, like that's gonna happen. Another thing that GMAC said that was interesting is the coaching staff. There's gonna be some familiar faces. There's gonna be some new faces. What does that mean? We have no idea,
Don't
but he did hint that we're gonna have these assistant coaches ready before the transfer portal opening. So I would expect
know.
some just,
That's 5 days, 4 or 5 days. So
so announcements coming soon.
soon.
I really think that it's gonna be some former Syracuse players, some current assistant coaches.
Do we think Eric Devendorf gets a nod? Do we think Tyus Battle gets a nod?
Diemendorf would be an interesting one. We had him on the podcast this year. He's someone that played at Syracuse, obviously, stepped away from the program, has come back to the community and done a really good job here. The Syracuse fan base recently has really rallied around him, both as a as a member of the community. He runs some clinics. He has his foundation that does a lot of great work, and also as he's done some broadcasting with ESPN and the ACC network. So I don't think that would be a bad choice. I think obviously you need some guys that have a little more experience than Diefendorf, but that would certainly be an interesting choice, and I think one that the fan base can get around him. I also think one thing that stood out was like GMAC's desire to win. Like that was the big thing at that Monday press conference. It was just
You can't
wants to
question, and
win,
you can't
wants to
question
win.
that.
No, you can't. And Syracuse fans really rallied up behind GMAC when he was a player here. They loved him. He was one of the most beloved players. Syracuse won the national championship in 2003, stayed all 4 years, was top five in points, steals, assists. He leads the program in minutes and free throw percentage and three pointers. He's a Syracuse guy. And I think the fan base is really going to rally behind him.
Absolutely. I mean, really can't get a closer name besides Carmelo Anthony to how intrinsically orange that person bleeds. I mean, Jerry McNamara is the pinnacle of that. And I think, Syracuse in a good spot. I think this week will be really interesting. I think, we kind of saw, we'll get into the women's team here in a little bit about, what's going on over there. But I think we're about to get a whirlwind of updates between the coaching staff. Who's staying? Who's leaving? It should be a fun week.
Yeah, it will definitely be a fun week. We'll have a maybe an earlier week podcast next week. We should have a good interview for next week as well, but we'll definitely talk some basketball with the portal opening on the men's and women's side. So that will be fun to see. I think Ben Lee is a name that I am very interested in as an assistant coach. Was the associate head coach at Siena. He's been rumored for a couple head coaching jobs. I think he's a very good mind, someone to look out for. He doesn't get a head coaching job for GMAC to bring over to Syracuse. Now, on the women's front, it was kind of quiet, honestly, for a couple of days after Uche Azoje. Big news, she's coming back. Posted on Instagram with the team saying that she's committing herself back to Syracuse. And I was like, okay, that's kind of the one big person that you needed to get back for Syracuse. Kind of
What Griffin?
figured that Sophie Burrows is going to
Did she take all the
come back.
money? Did she take every
I
last
don't think
cent
so.
from the program?
No, I don't think so. But it was like, all right, well, Sophie Burrows has been here 3 years. You kind of figured she's going to come back, right? Nope. Sophie Burrows has entered the transfer portal along with Maddie Potts and Justice Fitzgerald. I was kind of shocked. I'm not going to lie. Someone that didn't have as great of a year she did last season as a sophomore, but she's been steady. 3-point presence since her freshman year when she came in. Kind of started right away, was a scoring third, fourth option for Syracuse. Was expected to make that jump this season, didn't really do that. But both her and Maddie Potts signed with a new talent or a new agency, and so they're both in the portal.
Yeah, I mean, I think we had kind of talked about it. It was a little bit of an up and down year for Sophie Burrows. She was a little slow at the start. She picked it up. She had some great games. It's unfortunate, right? I mean, she was a pretty important piece on this team. And when you're already losing Layla Felia and Dominique Darius potentially, it's tough because now you go from having three of your five starters last year to now just two. And I think obviously they know they're going to build around Azoje, but to lose three of your top four scoring options, that's a tough ask for Felicia Legette-Jack to go out and replace. So, it's definitely early in the cycle. And she went out and got Felia and Darius from the portal to anchor this team this year, so she's not incapable of doing that. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Obviously, the culture seems to not be an issue. I mean, this team was pretty strong as they had been in recent years this season. So, definitely an interesting sign here at the start of the portal window here to see more, I think, than we thought headed out from the squad.
Yeah, I don't know if it's been more than we thought. Like, I thought there would be some turnover just because Syracuse had a lot of underclassmen that hadn't necessarily gotten a lot of play. But I didn't expect Maddie Potts and Sophie Burrows to be two to leave. I think if I was Syracuse's general manager constructing this roster for next season, I would want Sophie Burrows on it.
Absolutely.
And I don't think it's particularly close. Maybe Syracuse felt differently. Maybe Sophie Burrows thought she could get some better opportunity elsewhere. Who knows? And we'll probably never know. That's just the way of the transfer portal these days. But interesting opportunities there. And obviously, we'll keep the women's transfer portal updates going as well. That also opens up next week. So that will be interesting. Now to lacrosse, men's team. Up to number three in the Inside Lacrosse poll after a big 16-15 win against Duke on Saturday. If really electric first half. 10
Oh.
goals. Syracuse allowed 10 goals. Trailed at the end of the first half by one. And then third quarter kind of, I wouldn't say dominated, but got off to a hot start and took away a very good win against an undefeated Duke team at the time.
Yeah, I think the story of this game we knew going in was going to be these are two really good offenses. We knew that. Duke was the number one scoring offense in the nation. And with all the playmakers on Syracuse, you knew that they were going to have to score a lot of goals to win, and they did. I was really impressed. I mean, there was a lot to like in this game. You get the long pole goal at the start with Dwan just kind of camping in front of the net. That kind of energizes the crowd. I mean,
That was awesome.
there was just so many plays. And then, like, literally a couple minutes later, you have Finn Thompson get free, and Anderson throws that underhand scoop to him, and the BTB goal Thompson had. Like, this offense is just so fun to watch. They literally make every game entertaining. It doesn't matter if they're losing. What you would hope that they would try and not be as flashy when they're losing, but there's so many playmakers on this team. It doesn't get old. Like, literally, you can't get sick of watching this team. There was so many different plays that they made during this game. Griffin, I think we had this talk at the start of the year. This is a pretty big win over Duke. They've got another test coming this weekend, but how are we feeling about the national championship aspirations? Right now, I think they're my second favorite team to win the national championship. I think Princeton's still my favorite to win the championship, but I mean, Syracuse keeps piecing together. I mean, this is what, nine straight, eight straight, no, seven straight wins now?
This was
Six
six.
straight wins? Six straight wins. Geez, I'm jumping the gun on the women's team over here.
Yeah,
Six straight
exactly.
wins, and they've looked darn good doing it. I mean, they pick up a ranked win against Johns Hopkins, Denver, Georgetown, Duke. This is four ranked wins in the last five games. This team is legit. I mean, there's really no two ways about it. And I think that Duke game was pretty awesome. That was plenty of highlight plays in that game.
Yeah, if you're watching this right now, don't leave. But after you finish watching the pod or listening to the pod, the three clips from that game, you mentioned it. The Dwan goal was ridiculous. The Peyton Anderson pass might be the greatest pass that I've seen in a while. Because Peyton Anderson, not known to be a passer, not known to be a playmaker or a facilitator. And then after the press conference, in the press conference after the game, someone asked, "Hey, is this something that Peyton tries to do?" And they were like, no. And then they laughed about it and were like, "Yeah, well, sometimes Peyton tries to do it, but like it never turns out this well." But it was crazy. Gary, Coach Gate, and Joey Spillane were having a good laugh about it after in the press conference, which I thought was pretty funny. And then the Finn Thompson behind the back goal was sweet.
Just
Oh
filthy.
my God. I mean, this team knows how to put on a show. And for them to be that type of team to play in the dome. I mean, dome teams are flashy. Like, Syracuse has always been a flashy type of team for men's lacrosse. And so it's just fitting that this team is good. I don't think that Princeton is the team that Syracuse should be scared of in the national championship.
Ooh.
I don't want to play Princeton. but I'm more scared of this UNC team.
Yep, there it
I
is.
am. I am very scared of the Tar Heels. Brady Wambach might be the most
He's underrated.
impactful player in the country.
I
Like,
agree.
he might be, if there was a most valuable player award for men's college lacrosse, I think it might go to Brady Wambach. He is just levels better than anyone else in the face-off X. He dominated John Mullen last year, and John Mullen was probably a top 3 to 5 FOGO last season. This season, he's winning over 70% of the time. That's just electric. And then when you have Owen Duffy at the attack scoring 7 goals and a 17-7 win
Petromala,
over
yeah,
Harvard.
Petromala too. I mean, they got incredible. This team's pretty unreal.
UNC beat Harvard 17-7. Harvard beat Syracuse.
Yeah.
That is absurd. So this UNC team is good. Their defense, we'll see if, I mean, they allowed only 7 goals to Harvard. So they can be good. Who knows if they're good enough to stop a Syracuse level offense? And that will be the answer. We'll see what type of game Jimmy McCool has. That will probably be the teller. On the road, not a dome crowd, Syracuse. Well, play in warm weather, so they don't have to worry about that down in Chapel Hill. But if Jimmy McCool played the way he did in that fourth quarter against Duke, which, we usually see Jimmy McCool play like that in the fourth quarter, if he can extend that to the majority of the game, then I would give Syracuse a good shot at winning this.
Yeah, I like for me, Griffin. I mean, I don't think you can get a tougher matchup at the face-off X. That's pretty. I mean, that puts your team already behind when you're going up against a guy that wins 70% of draws. I mean, that's pretty absurd for the schedule. I mean, UNC has played all the Ivies this year, just like Syracuse has. I mean, this is a battle-tested team. They had a little bit of a slower start. They didn't really get into that ranked play at the start of the season with Jacksonville and Iona. But, they beat Hopkins. They struggled with Princeton. But I mean, this team, this is gonna be if Duke and Syracuse was a heavyweight matchup, I'm really excited to see this. I mean, it's a top three game, two top three teams going at it. I don't know, Griffin. Is Mullen? Does he have a shot? Like, I just don't see how there's a way they win if Mullen can only win 30% of faceoffs, especially with how, reliant on the faceoff Syracuse has been this year. And they thrive in games where Mullen dominates, and they just kind of eke out wins. I mean, he only beat Duke by 2 faceoffs last week. I feel like this is a pretty, like you said at the start, this is a pretty tough matchup.
It's incredibly tough, and I think this will set the tone for the course of the season. I mean, after this, Syracuse takes on Virginia, who just beat Notre Dame. Virginia was unranked, and now they're in the top 15.
Good for them.
So that is absurd. Notre Dame is the last game of the season. Syracuse plays Colgate, who always likes to give Syracuse some trouble.
Oh, no Connor brothers this year, so.
No, so that is helpful, of course. Colgate head coach, a great guy. We interviewed him last year as well. So it'll be interesting to see how Syracuse does. I mean, if John Mullen continues to struggle, as I am with my wording right now, like he did the past couple of games and over the course of this season, then it might be difficult. Syracuse's defense needs to step up, which they have been all season. Riley Figueres has been playing like a first-team All-American. I gotta give a lot of credit to Vincent Bolognino, a guy
Oh,
that
yeah.
not as wasn't really heard of to the majority of Syracuse fans this season, comes in and just dominates. Like, is one of the best short stick defensive midfielders in the country, and I think that's not really a statement, or not short stick, just defensive midfielders in the country. He plays both long and short stick midfield. Like last season, he was. This season, he's just been spectacular. And so when you have a guy like that who's picking up 20 ground balls and working on clears as a shorty or as a long pull if they need him to run one, to have that flexibility there. Syracuse has just done such a good job this season at that unit. We didn't know what they were going to give us with Carter Rice gone. That was a big question mark. They've been filling that out. I'm hesitant. I'm not going to give a score prediction for this one because I just want to enjoy the game
Yeah.
and see what will happen, because this probably is going to be the best game of the regular season. And we've already gotten a lot of good ones. You could say that Duke one
That was pretty
was a
awesome.
thriller in the dome. Obviously the Maryland game as well. This should be a very good game.
Yeah, I'll be a little less boring than you. I guess I'll give my score prediction here. For North Carolina, obviously we mentioned it's going to be about the draws, and I think Syracuse is the more talented team. I look at the playmakers, Owen Duffy and Dom Petromala, two great scorers for UNC. But I look in the net. Josh Marcus, he's below 50% on saves this year. So I think if Syracuse can manage to win 40 to 45% of draws, they already have, I think, the playmaking advantage. I think they have the goalkeeping advantage. That's pretty evident. It's really just going to be inside the X. And if Syracuse wins those faceoffs, there's no reason that they can't win this game by 2 to 3 goals. But I do think you got to give credit to Brady Wambach. I think UNC ekes out a one goal win. I'll go 11-10 North Carolina, but I think this game should go down to the last possession, just like we've seen quite a few Syracuse games this season.
Yeah, the cardiac Cuse extends to the cross per usual. It would be very fun if that if the men's basketball team down in Chapel Hill was playing in the Final Four, and so our good friends Nick Evans and Dan Papillo, who are going down to call that one, would get some good basketball memories of just hanging out there with the North Carolina crowd. That game at 2 p.m. on WAER 1:30 McClure Remodeling countdown to face off, double overtime going up until 5:30. Will be a very interesting game. I'm excited. Should be a really fun one. We don't got an interview this week. We do. We'll probably have one next week, all but confirmed. With Virginia head coach Lars Tiffany, we're really excited. Virginia coming off a big win against Notre Dame last week. Huge win. Good, happy for our guy, Coach Lars. So that should be exciting for next week. You know, maybe even got to give a quick shout out to Josh, who won't be hosting this week's double overtime, but will probably ho be hosting a couple more in the future.
We'll
Congratulations, my
see.
good friend.
Oh, thank you very much, Griffin.
So that will be fun. Yeah, I mean, we can't not talk about this women's lacrosse team,
Wow,
which
man.
continues to surprise people. The 10th win in a row. Syracuse women's lacrosse 10-3 after starting the season on a three-game losing
I'm
streak.
sure they're tired of hearing that stat. I think they probably say that
Yeah,
every time they win. After starting the season 0-3, Syracuse has won its X game in a row. I mean,
hey.
this team's unreal. I mean, this is pretty insane to just to flip that around, though.
You have a big win, 16-7, which it was way
They're
more
up
dominant
16,
than that.
15-2 at the end of the third. They just
Yeah.
dominated Pitt, and Pitt was ranked.
They pulled Daniela Gaillette after the third quarter. They said, hey, take a breath. Midseason third team All-American Daniela Gaillette. Put some respect on Gaillette's name there. 23rd ranked 24th ranked Pitt. So that was domination over a ranked opponent. And then comes Tuesday's game over in Cornell. I would call this game a trap game. Anytime you
Yeah,
play another New
absolutely.
York team outside, we saw it with UAlbany, it's gonna be
They did the
hard.
same thing 2 weeks in a row. They played a Tuesday
Exactly.
afternoon game in New York, although this one didn't start until 8 p.m.
Yeah, it was a big delay because of lightning and rain. And talking about the weather, I mean, the weather, I guess that was yesterday. That feels like a while ago, given how long that game went. As Syracuse got the win 10-8, they were trailing at one point. It was 6-6 at halftime. It was 9-6 at the end of the third quarter, and Syracuse got the job done. A lot of credit, and I think this is one of the big storylines of this season. We know how good Molly Guzik is, and she's going to be great. Caroline Trinkus has really stepped it up in the second half of the season after a kind of a slow start, and you and I, Josh, called her, didn't call her out on it, but we kind of brought it up. It was like, okay, Caroline Trinkus had a little stretch where we hadn't out. She had those first three games, she had 2 goals apiece, but then the next, like four, she only had three, and so it was like,
Yeah.
okay, is Syracuse now relying just on Molly Guzik, or is her sophomore partner in Caroline Trinkus up on the midfield gonna help her out? And Caroline Trinkus has been spectacular. 3 goals and an assist against Cornell. 2 goals, 2 assists against Pittsburgh. She is really kind of being that 1A, 1B with Guzik.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was good because at the start of the season, you know, you were still kind of figuring people out. And Trinkus was one of the bigger contributors last year, even as a freshman. But, you know, we obviously knew this was going to be Molly Guzik coming into the season, and she's been just outstanding, and she's really been incredible for this team. But, you know, we knew this team was young coming into the season, and I think you've kind of seen that and a little bit of the inconsistencies that this team has gone through this season. And by no means could you interpret that as this team wins a game by less goals than it should, or loses a close game to a team that it's worse than. No, this team has been good. They find ways to win games. It doesn't matter if you're beating teams 6-5 or beating teams that you're significantly better than 10-8. The reality is, Reggie Thorpe knows how to win games. He'll find ways to do it, and I think he's proven that throughout this entire season. We'll say it again. I mean, this is probably the second best team in the ACC. They have that foe BC that waits them at the end of the season. But right now, I mean, this team, they got a big one also in North Carolina. They'll be playing only a couple miles apart from each other. That Duke game, that's a big rank test for them again.
It is, and it's interesting because the ACC, I would say, is pretty wide open. Teams are beating each other left and right. You saw North Carolina lose, you saw Stanford lose. Obviously, BC hasn't had as strong of a season as one would have thought they would, and being the dominant program that they are. So it'll be interesting. I think you can never root out this Reggie Thorpe squad, which I didn't know that we were going to be able to say this I guess this way through the season. Obviously, Syracuse ranked number three in the country. If you told me that, like, after those first three games, that Syracuse would end up being ranked third in the country before the ACC tournament, that would be pretty remarkable. So a lot of credit
They would have
to Coach
they would
Thorpe.
have needed to win 10 games in a row to get there, and they did just that.
Exactly. And Syracuse only has three games left in its season. That obviously starting against Duke on Saturday. That is a 4 p.m. opening draw in Durham. Yes, because the game was supposed to be at 5. They moved it up an hour, now at 4 p.m. So maybe Duke fans want to catch the March Madness games early. Maybe, who knows?
Well, their team unfortunately not playing on that day,
Yeah,
so.
I mean, we could talk about that for a little. I do want we'll finish the women's lacrosse before we get to the Final Four, because I definitely want to touch on the Final Four
Oh, I will
and the
entertain that, of
brackets.
course.
Not because of any good or bad, but because it's I guess the talk of the town.
It's the Final Four.
Yeah, for sure, of course. And then obviously Syracuse plays Notre Dame on April 11th, and then finishes its season, as you mentioned, on the road against Boston College. Three ranked opponents all in the top 20. So it should be interesting to see if Syracuse can end its season on a 13-game winning streak, which, I mean, we'll check the statistics, but might be the first time, I'm not sure ever, but in a while, certainly, that Syracuse has ended its season on a long winning streak like that. I remember a couple seasons ago, I think the year before I got here, that they started the season on a 15 or a long double-digit win streak. But it's truly remarkable what Coach Thorpe has done in just year one of his tenure. And again, Rick Beardsley was right. He said, watch out for this women's lacrosse team. And we shout out the defense, but we got to give the flowers to the defense a lot. Izzy Leham, Mackenzie Cilentri, Coco Vandiver, Casey Benoit, and obviously Danielle Guyette. A bunch more names, but those are the standouts for that Syracuse women's lacrosse defense. All right, Final Four action, and we can just talk general March Madness brackets. I always do well in the first round. I'm always up there, top five in the bracket groups first round. I think I got 24 out of 32 this year. Maybe I think I maybe a
Good.
little bit better, which
I think
is
I was
not
exact.
bad.
I think 24. I think 24 sounds pretty close to what I had too.
And that's respectable. Obviously, you're not going to get every team right. And then I did the math. The last four seasons, including this season,
Oh boy.
I have gotten out of 16 Final Four teams. How many do you think I've gotten right?
The last four seasons, the last four times, so including this year. So
Yep.
last year was all 4-1 seeds. So I'm going to say you had at least two of those. This year, I think Arizona was probably a pretty popular pick, so I think you probably had Arizona. Maybe you had Michigan. So we'll just take it at an average of two per year, but except we can't account for the fact that four seasons ago is UConn's first title, which was when there was so there's no way you got any that year. So I'll say you've gotten 6 out of 16 right.
Wow, you severely overestimated my skill, my friend.
Is
I
it
got
lower?
zero this year.
Oh my.
Zero. I had Houston, Duke, Iowa State, and Arkansas.
Oh, Arkansas. Oh, really bad pick. Very bad
Yeah,
pick.
I wouldn't say really bad. They made it to the
Horrible defense.
Sweet 16.
They
Yeah,
didn't
I
make it to the
didn't.
Sweet 16. Barely, though.
Arkansas?
Yeah, they did. No, I said they did. Barely. They sneaked past that High Point team.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of took the John Calipari, Darius Acuff juice, like
Yeah, I
rolled
think
with it.
a lot of people are on that.
But yeah, so I got zero this year. Last season, I'm not even gonna tell you. I've gotten one Final Four team right in the past 4 seasons.
Wow.
I had Illinois losing in the first round this year to
Wow.
Penn.
Had them in the Elite Eight, but I had them losing to Vanderbilt. So I had two of the Final Four teams. I had Michigan and I had Arizona.
All right, good
I
for you.
actually no, I had Arizona. Well, I did two brackets. I got to shout out
Oh.
my brother. He has a perfect Final Four, which I know it's kind of insane that, a perfect Final Four. There's two one seeds and then there's Illinois and there's UConn. So it's not crazy, too
I would say
far
that's
off,
pretty
but
crazy.
like I was impressed. I had to shout him out. I mean, that's pretty great. But I still have a chance to win the bracket pool if Michigan wins the championship and UConn loses to Illinois. I still have a chance to win.
That's possible.
Yeah.
It could
Michigan was
happen.
my champ going in. And I think Michigan, Arizona, I have to say it because we're on the topic. Best game in college hoops since Baylor Gonzaga national championship all the way back in 2021.
Like best game, like statistically or like the pre-hype.
I mean, you had undefeated Gonzaga and you had a stacked Baylor team. I think coming off that Final Four, Baylor just decimated Houston by 30 points. And then you had Gonzaga with one of the more emotional wins in college basketball history to keep their undefeated season alive. That game had a lot of stakes. This Zona Michigan game feels very similar. And I think the two teams really meet each other well. They're so, like, in terms of size and in terms of skill, I don't think you can have a closer matchup between the guard play, the forward play, the big play. Like, this is going to be the championship game. This is going to be an unreal game. It should be an unreal atmosphere in Indianapolis.
It should be. I still don't know who I want to win. I don't really like Michigan or Arizona. I think Michigan needs to start getting rid of these 25-year-old players.
Oh.
Nope, I'm just kidding. I do like Illinois' story, but I don't think they have a shot. I think honestly, I think UConn's gonna win. I think I'm just riding with the Danny Hurley juju on that train. I'm all aboard. As the kids
Give me
say.
Illinois.
Who knows? Maybe we'll see. We'll have our Final Four national championship reactions next week on the Ostrom Avenue podcast. We'll recap that Duke game or that UNC game that's happening on Saturday. That should be a good one. Obviously, Syracuse women's lacrosse playing Duke on Saturday. Maybe we'll have some portal news. Next week's episode should be a banger. We should also have a good interview with Lars Tiffany as well, head coach of UVA men's lacrosse. We got a lot of episodes that you can listen to here on the Ostrom Avenue podcast at WAER.org or wherever you get your podcast. For now, it's been Griffin and Josh. We'll catch you next week.